Welcome in, kingly brothers and heroic husbands from around the planet. Welcome to this new episode of the Be the Husband She Brags About podcast. This is the one podcast where everything we do, we say, we express aims to support you become the marriage transforming hero of your relationship. In today's episode, I am pumped, I am excited to introduce you, kingly brothers, to attachment theory. Attachment theory is the study of human attachment, what happens psychologically, emotionally inside of ourselves as we form this, as we find ways of forming attachment with people around us. In this context, clearly I'm going to be talking within the intimate relationship between yourself and your queen. So, in this episode, I'm going to be talking about why attachment styles form in the first place. What's the human experience behind it? And in this, I want to invite you into a non-judgmental awareness of this. And I would really challenge you to, first and foremost, become self-reflective upon your style. Of course, some of what is being spoken of here, maybe it'll come clear to you what your queen style is. Make sure that you're touching base more obsessively with your focus about figuring out you first. Self-awareness trumps everything in intimate relating. That's your foundation. And then, and only then, become aware of, you know, what your queen's style might be. There can be this tendency to, I am going to figure out my queen, and it's coming from a judgmental, resentful, yeah, look at that's she's always been that style, that's her problem, I've always been saying that she's wounded and blah blah blah. Not the fucking thing to do, guys. Not safe, not heroic, actually. Marriage transformation hero, heroic husbands, don't use this learning experience to form more knives and spears to judge your queen with. It's to hold a non-judgmental space. Everything in context makes sense. Every single human pattern of behavior makes sense when you understand the context. Let's get into it. There are two basic human needs. We cannot get away from these, and the needs are attachment and authenticity. When we're growing up, and yes, we will talk about childhood here, because childhood, technically to say 0 to 8 years, 9 years, they're the formative years, and the end of your formative years, like 95 or 99, you hear different facts, the vast majority of your belief system, how you will see the world and how you will interact with the world. Your belief system is formed in childhood. So childhood is really important to take a look at. What role attachment and authenticity plays in childhood? We'll simplify this. You know, we have the needs for attachment. People to care for us. People to hold space for us. People to feed us. People to move us around. People that will touch us, will hold us, will tend to us. Attachment needs are food, movement, and touch. There's emotional needs, but there you can bring it down to that. Food, feeding, the bottle, breast milk, feeding as a child. You know, it's like, oh, I'm so hungry and hangry. So your attachment needs is, are you being fed? Touch. You know, when you were in distress, when you're needing it, would somebody hold you? And then movement. Movement is like moving around. You might need to be moved out of your nappy. You might need to be moved from, you know, where you're super tired to bed. But it's emotional movement as well. So there are attachment needs. And authenticity is having a safe space held for your truth, who you are. You know, it's like, and truth comes very often, comes in a ecosystem of a family setup, it will come through anger. You know, it'll, hey, I'm no, you'll get upset as a kid. You don't have the skill set, but underneath anger, there's always another truth. There's your values you're figuring out. There's your opinions. There's your take on the situation. There's your wishes and wants and desires wanting to come true. And predominantly, pretty much every single guy I've spoken to is like, oh, their anger wasn't honored. They were spoken down to, and thus their authenticity wasn't brought through. Authenticity is also, you know, expressions beyond what is normal and accepted in the family. Very often it's like, you're passionate about art, but your dad couldn't care less about art. He wants to throw the American football around the yard. It's like, and he disregards the art, he disregards your desire to play with butterflies, and it's like, oh, come on, like, and it's, so we end up in this bind where our authentic human expression is not welcome, our anger is not welcome. And as a child, you need to look at the context with an open heart and understanding and go, it makes sense from a survival perspective that as children, we don't have the power. We, by evolutionary terms, being mammals, we are helpless. We're not lizards. Lizards, like, I think the vast majority of lizards, like, when they're born, they're independent. Off they go, they hunt, they eat, they're done by themselves. No, we are quite helpless for a long period of time, and it's a very slow social maturation process to the point at which, when we're fully independent, it takes many, many years. So we're completely dependent on support. So what happens when we're younger is we will completely hack out authenticity to make sure that we get our attachment needs met. Again, the person, they're putting a roof over our heads. They're bigger than us. They can move us around. They're the source of food. They're the source of touch. They're the source of the nappy being changed. They're the source of the car going around the place. They're the source of everything that we need. Attachment needs. So if our authentic expressionists mean welcomed, we will dampen that down and switch that off to make sure that our attachment needs are met. Attachment is all about survival. Authenticity is about thriving. One is about surviving, the other is about thriving. You know, surviving first and then thriving later. In all of this, and, you know, be listening in, but as always, I challenge you to, you know, to go deeper and to hold space for what's arising within you, you know, memories of the past, etc. Be digesting, allow your nervous system to go there. Our attachment issues, if you want to say, or no, not issues, the attachment patterns, let's call them the pattern, keep it neutral. When we experience distress, like when I looked into the research, most of it's pointed about the point of distress. That's where attachment patterns start. So you experience distress, you receive support, your attachment needs are met, then you experience relief, and that's repeated. So distress, support, attachment needs are met, relief, repeat. Distress, support, relief, repeat. You would form a radically secure sense of self. You would find that, oh, my authentic human experience, distress, is being held, is being supported, is being encouraged, is, you're safe. And then you experience relief and you would build an incredible muscle of, all of me is welcome, I'm fine. I will put in here, there's one thing I noted, guys, is like all this distress focus in the attachment theory research. I'm not saying all, I haven't done an exclusive, like all, everything. I'm quite sure there's tons of papers out there. But the most common talks about it is all focus on distress, which can bring you to believe that all attachment issues, patterns. I want to keep this solution focused, not problem focused. All attachment patterns start when, oh, you're crying and your needs weren't met, or, oh, like this emotional stress. But I would put in bliss as well, because, you know, was your bliss of singing, your blissful moments of you just wanted to climb and you wanted to shout around the house, were you safe to have that full expression? And if you were told to dampen down, was it told in a super respectful manner that over-communicated, you know, what was happening in your parents' lives at that moment? It's like, hey, Tommy, you know, it's like, I love your singing, man, but just right now I'm trying to listen to this program. So would you mind going to the next room? You know, very often our most blissful experiences as kids was, you know, Mark, be quiet. Mark, stop climbing around the place. Hard, disciplinarian, authoritarian shutdown of you in your most blissful moment. So think the stress, and I would also say think of you in your most blissful moments growing up. That the bliss, the authentic experience that you were having in blissful moments and distressing moments, what support was there? What encouragement was there in those moments? So as a result of growing up in the environment that you were living in, with your parents, stepmom, stepdad, whoever is there, the primary caregivers, and it does bleed into, we do get affected by, in our formative years, by first people at school, you know, if you went to creche, etc., etc. What happens is there's two things get set in childhood in our nervous systems. Inarguably, they're set in a very real way that determines how our nervous system sees the world, experiences the world. It sets patterns of meaning, how our nervous systems add meaning. The first of two distinct major occurrences in your nervous system is as a result of your attachment needs being met or not met in moments of your authentic human experience. Number one is the emotional thermostat is set inside of you. So in moments of distress, bliss, blissful, authentic human experience, your attachment needs are not met. This is almost exclusive in a profoundly sick society. Even very well-intentioned parents, it's exclusively 100% of the time that I've spoken with guys, attachment needs were not met, no matter how well-intentioned. So there's one of two choices in a moment like that, when your most blissful moment, you're going, you're singing, you're fucking, you're just, you're Bear Grylls, you're like, you're climbing, you're Alex Honnold. If you're singing, you're fucking Bruce Springsteen, you know, whatever. You're in that full bliss moment, or you're in the distress moment, and then your attachment needs are not met. Somebody doesn't come to you. They criticize you for crying. Or you have to cry, and then eventually, at some point, you fall asleep. Nobody came, or you have to go absolutely berserk to get attention. We have two choices. We amp up our nervous system. That's anxiety. Super high activity in the nervous system. Or you ramp it down. You turn down the volume. That becomes avoidance. So it's like, I'll ramp it up. You learn, oh, I'm distressed. I'll ramp it up. I'll cry. I'll shout. I won't stop. And I won't settle my nervous system. And that's my way to eventually break the people around me to get my attachment needs met. If I don't shout loud enough, they'll never hear me. So I'll have my nervous system shouting. And you end up with this background set point where your nervous system is always on high alert. The other one is ramping it down, which is turning down the volume. One is turning up the volume. The thermostat is up. There's a set point of high activity. Always on alert. Alert. The other one is turning the thermostat down. Turn the volume down. It's low. You're always in and around the exact same emotion. Nothing really upsets you. So the emotional thermostat is set. You might be gaining an intuitive insight as to where you're at. Are you always amped up in relating with your queen and how you go about life? Or is there this like, Yeah, the volume is always in and around the same thing. It's a low volume. Number two, what happens? So there's the emotional thermostat is set in your nervous system. Number two is our beliefs are set. Understanding these mechanisms is really key. So you can find some kindness with yourself, and it's really important when you have reflections upon what your queen's attachment style is that you can be really kind and compassionate with her, that it brings understanding for you, for your queen, and amongst yourselves. The second thing that happens in childhood, in every human, is that beliefs are set. So the emotional thermostat is all emotional. It's about the volume in the nervous system. Super high volume or low volume. The belief set will come from the meaning that we attach to what has happened to us in our environment. And again, it makes perfect sense that when you're so reliant on caregivers, that our belief set doesn't go against the caregivers, because you're 2 years of age. You know, it's like you might as an adult, because you have the physical power and strength, but we still will end up having major issues. Actually, a ton of you touch base. Do you have like so-called issues with relating with your dad, with your mom? Maybe you might give the superficial answers like, oh, I'm good with my mom, I'm good with my dad. But like, are you able to express your fullness with them? Or do you have to censor what you can share? Are there things that you will share with your queen, with your therapist, with your buddies about your mom and dad that you wouldn't say to their faces? Again, 100% of guys would say to me, almost 100% of guys is like, I can't actually bring the full fullness. Some of them, they can't be real at all. So the belief systems are set. That as a child, you don't go against your parents, and you'll set your beliefs against yourself. You'll take everything that is showing up, if they're meeting your attachment needs or not, and again, pretty much 100%, it's just on a spectrum, attachment needs weren't met. We are, as children, answering four foundational questions when we're growing up. And we learn these, we attach meaning in moments of distress, bliss, our attachment needs weren't met when we were fully authentic, having a human experience. We will answer these four questions. Am I good enough? Can you handle me? Am I lovable? Can I count on you? And if the answer to those, you know, am I good enough? You know, like, I'm not good enough. You know, I'm not behaving. I'm not good enough. You might learn to be a good boy, and you'll start suppressing, repressing a ton of your authentic expression to make sure you're good enough. But you learn, oh my God, like when I bring up my fullness, my attachment needs, they turn away from me. They criticize me. They don't want to be near me. They see me as an inconvenience. You know, can you handle me? Is my authentic expression too much for you? God, you know, it's like my singing, this expression, when I get really emotional and I'm needing support, you know, can you handle me? Well, if you can't handle me, I'm too much. My full human experience is too much. I can't handle. Like I can't be handled. So it's very unsafe. Am I lovable? Well, if your full authentic human experience, if you were shut down, if you were criticized, if you're told in hard ways, judgmental, authoritarian, you know, my way or the highway type, in moments or predominantly, you will form very, very deep beliefs about your lovability. And that means that all your relationships thereafter is like will be determined by, am I lovable? In this profoundly sick society, the capacity to groundedly go, I love myself. I'm actually a really good human being. I value myself. I really love myself. I accept all of myself. You can feel there's a groundedness to it. It doesn't happen very often. There's some super self-deluded people. I love myself. They'll tell you in a very irksome way. Oh, I love myself, man. It's she has the issue. She doesn't love herself. She's wounded. Blah, 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 blah. I love myself. I was one of those assholes, by the way. You learn when we go through the attachment styles. So of all of these questions that you're answering, we draw conclusions about our lovability. And very often it's like, am I good enough? No, I'm not enough as a man. It's all pervasive in deep men's work, in the world of men. I'm not enough as a man. I'm not good enough. The vast majority of guys on the planet, unless they've done really deep healing inner work, deep men's work, etc., they'll experience a massive issue inside with the inner critic. Even super high-performing people, they don't believe they're good enough. That's what drives them, their shame. I just achieve another million. I'll add another billion. I just need one more Oscar. I just need one more title. I just need one more book to be written about me. I just need, I need, I need, I need. It's ceaseless needing. And that's in the external world. It's like, how does that show up with your queen? I just need more, more, more. And her love can't be enough. Because why? Deep down, I'm not enough. I'm not enough as a man. So her love and appreciation will never be enough. Can you handle me? Well, if you drew an idea from your childhood that, you know, my full authentic expression, they can't handle me. That belief will bleed into your relationship. Oh, she can't handle me when I'm at my fullness. She can't see me or hear me, or she gets really upset, or she shuts down, blah, blah, blah. She can't handle me. The world can't handle me. I'm too much for the world. Am I lovable? You know, it's like it's a close relative to, am I good enough? Am I lovable? If you don't feel you are lovable, you won't let love pierce you. So you will constantly be set to look for evidence that you're not lovable. Can I count on you? You know, am I safe? Can I depend on you in moments of distress and moments of bliss that you'll hold space for my authentic human experience? If in childhood you have brought on you added the meaning and you set the belief that I can't count on the most important people around me, you will bring that belief into marriage. And from all of those beliefs, the mix of the belief set and the emotional thermostat set point that all of you locked in between the ages of 0 and 8, 9 years of age, that mix of the emotional thermostat set point, super amped up or super low, mixed with the belief set, is what creates your attachment style. So let's go into, there are four in attachment theory, and it's been studied for well over 100 years. It's like an incredibly well researched aspect of the human condition. The latter years of it, well, the second half of it has been really a ton of it done on intimate relating. That's the eyes we will look at it from. So there are four key styles of attachment patterns, attachment styles. First is secure. Second is anxious, preoccupied. Third is dismissive, avoidant. And the fourth one is disorganized, also known as fearful, avoidant. We'll go through them one by one and remain open, remain honest and humble. Heroic humility, the ground of truth of where you're truly at. And again, figure out where you're truly at. Don't be obsessing about figuring out your wife so you can take her down in arguments and point and poke at her wounds. Don't do that, guys. Like, really, please. Don't do that. Not cool. It's like, I don't know. There's just like regular dude's language. Not fucking cool. If you're only here to fill up the tank of resentment and judgment so I can finally have Thierry to tell her how broken she is. If that's what your nervous system is doing now, you're as broken as her. Make that assumption. Like, we've all been traumatized. We have all been traumatized growing up. So this whole argument of, oh, she's more broken, not helpful. So number one, secure. Secure is where, when you're listening into this, like through the eyes of attachment theory, a secure attachment style is what you're looking for. It's the promised land. It's the North Star. Myself, in my practice, I'm continually, constantly aligning my belief set, my emotional thermostat set. I'm working with my nervous system to develop this secure style as my predominant, like, that's just my default way of showing up. Done a lot of work on it, but I'll be talking about the other styles. I am feeling more secure. It's 5.5 years doing exceptionally deep work, consistent work, etc., etc., but I'm not perfect. I will talk about my other styles. So a secure attachment style is really what you're looking to bring within yourself, to practice in your nervous system. What that looks like, it's comfortable. You're comfortable in your nervous system in deep, intimate relating. You practice being honest and open. No matter how intense the experience is, and it will be intense, you can allow your partner the absolute freedom to be who they are in their moment, to have their authentic human experience, whatever emotional intensity comes through them, and within reason to a point, whatever verbally, whatever they need to express, you can hold space with that. You can sit with that intensity without taking and making it personal. You know, it's like just always being on the defense. You can go, they're having a human experience. You merge together. You know, marriage is about union. You merge together. A secure attachment style is you accept that deep intimate relating, it's going to bring up irksome stuff. It's going to bring up wounds. There's going to be plenty of times when you have one viewpoint, your queen has another viewpoint, but you stick with it in a way that differences of opinion, you're not going to get outlandishly upset about them. You can see that, hey, we're different people. It's a beautiful thing, individuality. It's a beautiful thing that we have a different perspective on that. But you come back to connection. Secure styles come back to connection. The attachment is secure. It's like, hey, you have a different perspective. Baby, you know, let's agree to disagree. Let's do this with grace. Your perspective is that. My perspective is that. Well, how can we relate together in a way that both truths are honored? You get creative. You, in a secure attachment style, you'll communicate feelings effectively. Again, there is a human experience happening with your queen, within yourself. And you don't sling shit and blame both sides. You don't shame yourself. You communicate, hey, you know, when you said that, it's evoking this feeling. There's anger in me right now. And then you start figuring out, well, what does that mean about you? And in your communication, you're making it about yourself. You're figuring out you. And you communicate it in a non-defensive, non-attacking manner to your queen, and then, you know, she communicates effectively. That's a secure attachment style. You're highly resilient when you have a secure attachment style. Highly resilient. You know, you just accept that conflicts, sometimes super intense, they're going to happen. In the mixing and sharing of a lifelong relationship together, parenting, economy, you know, parents die, parents-in-law die, house changes, kids growing up, fuck you, like, there's a ton of stuff's going to happen. Conflict is going to happen. Conflict is happening, and you're there, you're like, you're going to chase the storm. Tsunami comes, you've already got the surfboard in the hand. You're not going to be taken down by any of life's unpredictable nature. You're going to embrace that. You're highly resilient. And you grow together. This is really key, at a healthy pace. You're like, you're not trying to force yourself to be enlightened, you, yourself. You're honoring of your trauma, you're honoring of where your own nervous system is at. But you're not trying to force your queen to suddenly make a quantum leap and be an angel. You know, it's like, and be fine. You know that the whole journey, the joy of the journey is growing together. But you're not forcing the growth to happen. Grow up now. You know, it's like, grow up, woman, stop being so, you're so wounded. What you're trying to do is force growth. You know, grow up in the next 2 seconds, or I'm going to constantly judge you. And it happens both ways. you know that there's in a secure attachment style, it's like, hey, we're growing. There's tons of imperfections. There's tons of trauma. There are tons of, you know, rough edges, but we're going to sand this up. We're going to like upgrade this. We're going to heal. We're going to grow together, you know, slowly but surely. And in the meantime, we'll just remain connected, you know, honoring each other's human experience, honoring the wins, honoring the breakthroughs, honoring the upskilling and the capacity over time to reconnect better, to keep the connection more predominantly. And when you do conflict, you do it with style and you grow slowly but surely. Anxious, preoccupied. So secure, maybe the North Star for a lot of you listening in, maybe some of you, you know, some of you might have certain elements of that. I will sort of point out that a major blind spot for guys, you know, if you're listening in, maybe you're, you know, you're sincerely wanting to be the marriage transformation hero. Some guys are listening in that are already, they're attending, you know, heroic husbands, men's circles. You're doing the work. Very, very often the major blind spot in the room, the elephant in the room is guys can get a massively overestimated view of their own growth. So I just a blind spot in this. If you're there going, yeah, secure, that's me. I'm honest. I'm open. I allow my partner absolute freedom. I'm fucking, we merge together. Conflict. I fucking love conflict. But on that opinion, you're building a moral high ground. And if there's a part of your nervous system going, but she's the one that's not secure. She's the one that's not secure. She's the one that doesn't communicate her feelings. She's the one. You're not secure. So I just want to speak to this. This is very common in deep men's work. Guys do, they listen to a podcast, read a couple of books. And again, they use it. The devil quotes scriptures for his own rights, for his own purposes. That's ego, guys. If you're there sort of arrogantly, smugly going, well, I'm secure, you're ticking, I'm ticking all the boxes of a secure attachment style, she's the one with issues, there's a 99.999999% chance you're not secure. At all. If there's judgment coming through. Just want to speak to that. I will say, there's nudges towards a more secure style. You may have made some growth, but if you're still listening to this podcast and if, you know, if your queen is showing up in a way that is really difficult for you, she would heal if you were in a if you had a predominant, consistent moment over 6 to 12 months, nay, I would say years of a secure attachment style, she'd have healed massively and she wouldn't be so irksome. So you might have a little bit of recent stuff, but you weren't predominantly that. So there's a lot of momentum of your non-secure attachment style still haunting you if you're seeing shitty stuff show up in your marriage. So that's the secure, that's the North Pole. We all want to be going and feeling in and building momentum behind a secure style. Anxious, preoccupied. Anxious, preoccupied as an attachment style shows up. The emotional thermostat set point is high. It's like revved up. It's like a Formula One car, World Rally Championship car. Revving up. It's ready to go. Because why? You learned in childhood that people with an anxious, preoccupied attachment style, they learn that there's danger everywhere. So I need to be revved up. I need to have my emotional system revved up, on the alert. Hence anxiety, anxious, preoccupied. Anxiety is nervous. I'm revved up. Where's the threat? I need to control. Anxious, preoccupied styled shows up as people that romanticize love. They're very often, you might find that you were attracted to a partner that could save you or that you could save them. Oh, you finally know, my anxiety will drop. In this person, I just feel so complete. You know, they'll save me. Anxious, preoccupied style will show as behaviorally as being demanding. Very demanding. And if in yourself, it's like if you're upset, you let your queen know it. You let everybody in the environment know it. Because you're like, I'm upset. I need it. I need my needs to be met. I need my attachment needs to be met. It's loud and super intense. Anxious, preoccupied, when you have that pattern, and hey, seeing it in yourself might be difficult. Maybe you'll see it in your queen. You're threatened by space in a relationship. And it will bring certain characteristics of being obsessive, clingy. There's an overanalyzing of situations. Again, it's that lack of safety. Analyzing, talking, thinking, obsessing over it. That thing that you said, and never wanting to just surrender and go, hey, I'm going to trust the situation. There's always this high amped up nervous system activity in thinking or emotional, just not being safe. And it brings clinginess. It's turbulent. Passionate when the person will meet you there. Passionate because, hey, anxious, preoccupied style in the nervous system will be, you're with me, we're making love, oh, passion. And there's this outpouring of passionate love, you know, oh, I so appreciate when you're with me. But it's turbulent because once a person takes a step away to relieve the pressure of all that clinginess on their nervous system, if it's your partner, the anxiety amps up. So it's super turbulent. When we're together, it's passionate. It's like happily ever after. We're the romantic ideal of, you know, the books and novels I read, in the films I watch. That's who we are when we're at our best. But God, there's this other moment when you want to take a step away from me. It gets super turbulent, and the nervous system will go against space being wanted to be established by your partner. Somebody with an anxious, preoccupied style or pattern in their nervous system, very often they've grown up without boundaries. Narcissistic parenting, overstepping boundaries again and again. They had no boundaries, so they don't know how to be themselves without somebody else being super close to them. There was no guidance in nurturing their own individuality. So again, there's no defined, grounded, self-loving identity of, this is who I am when I'm by myself. Identity is formed through the connection with others. So when you're by yourself alone, you don't know who the fuck you are. So you're seeking that attachment to self-regulate. The desire to share everything. If it's within yourself, you'll find anxious, preoccupied, a key sign is that you need to share. If there's an issue in a relationship, you need to share. I need to share. I need to share everything about my childhood. I need to share everything about myself. I need to share what's happening in my human experience. If your queen doesn't want to meet you there, it's like you will feel a lot of anxiety. Be like, when is she going to re-engage? It's like, we need to talk about this. I need to talk about this. And there's a sharing of everything. Again, closeness regulates. Distance dysregulates. They're threatened by others around their partner. You know, it's like there's this impending doom, the anxiety that your attachment needs will not be met. There can be an obsessive focus of the dangers and threats inherent in the environment. Oh, did that guy look at you? Did you look at that guy? That guy at work, you know, it's like, and it might be internalized anxiety of, oh God, you know, you might take it as shame. Oh, it's like you're obsessing, you know, there's that guy at work, you know, she's talking about that guy at work, and I can't believe, like, I mean, she lit up, like she was on the phone the other day, and you get obsessive about the potential dangers out there. Or you might blame her. You might actually accuse her. She then start saying, oh, you're jealous, etc., etc., if that's within yourself or anxious, preoccupied within your queen. So that's anxious, preoccupied. Again, keep as radically honest with yourself, first and foremost, about where you're at. Secure, anxious, preoccupied. Now, dismissive, avoidant. With dismissive, avoidant, and feel into yourself here, it's, you know, the emotional thermostat set point is low. I know dismissive, avoidant, for those of you that are curious, this is definitely, when I was doing the research, I was like, oh my God, I'm a fucking textbook dismissive, avoidant style. Textbook. Emotional thermostat set point is low. Cool, calm, not upset. You know, the tendency is to be emotionally distant, to come across as self-sufficient, independent, and avoid true intimacy. in this, I definitely would relate. Is, you know, I being emotionally distant, I was scared shitless of intimacy, but I didn't disclose that. That's another key thing. Somebody with dismissive, avoidant tendencies, they don't disclose, they don't open up, they don't be, they're not honest with what's truly going on within themselves. And somebody with a dismissive, avoidant pattern is going to minimize distress in themselves and minimize distress in their partner. You know, it's not that bad, really. You're trying to turn down the volume of their human experience, because you learned in childhood is like set your nervous system down really low. Just keep it low. Keep it low. Don't upset people around you with a high nervous system activity. That's unsafe. So just keep it low, keep it low. But because you have formed all your belief systems that that is the right way to go about it, a dismissive, avoidant person will be very judgmental of their partner's high emotional state, of their anxiety, of their passion, of anything that is super intense. In the emotions, if in somebody with an emotional thermostat set point in the moment or predominantly high, they'll be very, very upset by it, and they will judge it. Somebody who has a dismissive avoidance style will distract themselves with tasks, doing, because when you're doing, and thinking, you're not feeling. There's an avoidance of emotionality as a human experience. Do whatever just keeps the background emotional awareness to a minimum. Where the anxious preoccupied will let you know, you'll know they're upset in the moment. Dismissive avoidant, the upset will come out 3 days later, 3 months later, 3 years later. You know, it will come out, and I did it like tons. An argument or a conversation, whatever, and then I'd say to my company, yeah, well, that time when you looked at that guy, 3 weeks later, 3 months later, and my queen would be like, what? Like, you were upset? You were upset that day? And I, in that moment, like, when the thing happened, none of my upset would have been displayed to my queen verbally or by my body language. It's like I'd be null, because the dismissive avoidant set point in emotion, in the emotional level, is so low that you don't actually display a big upset. There's little cues to the upset that if you really, really, really pay attention, and your queen will notice it anyway, but your thing is so, I'm so low, I'm just like, I'm not upset by anything. But the upset comes afterwards. 3 days, 3 months, 3 years later. That time when you did that and you said to your mother, but on that day when you said that thing to your mother, you, like a dismissive, avoidant person, was pretending, was, I'm fine. They were putting on this persona of I'm fine. The upset comes out much later after the situation happens, where when the situation happens, the anxious preoccupied, they can't fucking hide it. They just go there. Dismissive avoidant desires space. Lots of space. Getting lost doing what you like doing. You know, space on holidays. You'll go for a walk by yourself. And of course, plenty of these things can be beautiful and perfect by themselves on in all of these categories. The dismissive avoidant person will go, oh, I'm not just seeking space. It's not like having space in nature is good by itself. Of course, space in a secure attachment style relationship is positive, but desiring space because you're avoiding the emotional jarring experience that comes up with your partner, it's desiring space as a means to avoid intimacy, to avoid being vulnerable with your queen, and blaming. Yeah, I'm taking space because she's so goddamn irrational. God, she's so, you know, you take space from there. I know I was doing that a fucking ton. I just need to go for a walk with the dog because fuck, for fuck's sake, you know, where she's at home with all her anxiety, all her fears, all her jealousy. God's sake, just let me get out the door with my dog. Because why? Dismissive avoidant is the way, is the enlightened way. It's what I wasn't using the words, but I was thinking I was the one that was sane and she was insane. That's a key thing with dismissive avoidance. Judgment of insanity in others. She's so fucking off the rails. Feel into yourselves, guys. What's showing up inside your own mind as I'm speaking this? Threats of a partner to leave. You know, with somebody who has a dismissive avoidance style, attachment style, if your partner threatens to leave, you know, oh, I'm going to divorce. That's it. I was about to say bastards, an Italian term. My wife's Italian. It comes true. There's certain words in Italian, just they sound better. So yeah. Anyway, side comment. Threats of a partner leaving. Dismissive avoiding will be like, they'll go into shutdown, like they don't care. It's like, oh, you want to leave? Listen, you want to leave? Go leave. I mean, stupid decision. Whatever, you're just going to leave, and they start being judgment. But they'll, again, it's the low emotional set point. I'm not going to get upset about this. If you want to do that, I think it's stupid. I think it's selfish. You're just going to leave me, the kids. You're going to leave like our marriage of 10 years, and you're just going to do this and another one of your big, massive outburst, sort of immature type shit. Like, whatever, go. There's the door. I'll open it for you. I've been there, guys. I've done that with my queen. Pretending deep down that I didn't care. Oh, you're going to be with that guy? Go on, go. Good luck to him. That's what I would have said. It would be like, hey, fine. You want to drop like after 5 years together, 10 years together? You want to do it? Fine. Good luck to him. Like, I'll send him like a good luck letter with you. It was like, but you want to go? I'll open the door. I'll be fine. Good luck with you being fine. You're a mess. There's always this thing of, I'm fine, because again, the set point, the thermostat is set on low. You just will not allow emotionality to come through. That's dismissive avoidant. And the extreme independence, it's not powerful, because why? We're social beings who need close connections. We are. So dismissive avoidant, they'll avoid intimacy in their marriage, but they'll also avoid true intimacy with their friends. They've no true friends, and dismissive avoidant people will argue against this point, but it's like friends that you fully reveal what's going on, the inner challenges, the lack of connection at home, the fact that you haven't had sex in 2 years, you know, the challenges with your kids, etc., etc. True friends where you are fully held, fully vulnerable. Dismissive avoidant styles don't form really true friends. You're doing brilliant, guys. Stick with this. This is super potent learning for you in your individual life, for your queen, for the world, actually, the seven generations afterwards, and for your kids. Because when you become aware of this, awareness kicks off all healing. So doing brilliant. We've went through secure, anxious, preoccupied, dismissive, avoidant, and last but not least, disorganized, a.k.a. fearful, avoidant attachment style. Disorganized, fearful, avoidant. A key thing here is, like, for those of you that had experienced extremely volatile environments growing up, where there was distinct abuse happening, where your caregivers were a very distinct source of terror, of fear. They might have been fine, but then when they had drink, fine, but my God, when they got upset and had a bad day at work, what would come home? Fine. So your environment growing up was super volatile. This tends to be a key thing that brings a very natural response of disorganized, fearful, avoidant. The emotional thermostat set point that I call it, it's like high and low. It's like the thermostat is super high some moments and then will flip like a coin. It's an on-off switch. Super high, down to low. High, low. And that's why it's called disorganized. Fearful avoidant. There's a lot of fear in the nervous system. Like the nervous system growing up just learned, I need to be fearful. Fear, fear, fear. So there's a fear of moving towards and the fear of pulling away. So like there is this impulse of, oh, I move towards, I love you, I love this relationship, I need you, I move towards you. And then when your queen, if you have a disorganized, fearful, avoidant, when your queen actually opens up emotionally, actually has a smile on her face, things are going good, you're making love, some part of your nervous system switches off and pulls away and gets, you know, critical of her. Just finds any excuse all of a sudden to just criticize her, to pull away, to go distant. And somebody who is with a disorganized, fearful, avoidant styled, attachment style person will, I just don't know how to trust you. When you're good and you're with me, man, you're the best in the world. You're so fucking amazing. But then all of a sudden you just ghost me. You go distant. I don't know where the fuck you are. And there's no reason. There is a reason. But the reason does not lie in the present moment. The reason lies in childhood, as it does with all of these styles. So there's the fear of being too close, and there's also the fear of being too distant. It's like, oh, you'll stonewall, but then at some point your fear comes in, and then you're seeking her attachment again. You're seeking her presence again. Life is very unpredictable inside of yourself when you have a disorganized, fearful, avoidant style, because it's unpredictable. You have total clarity in the moment that you're seeking the love, and you have total clarity in the moment when you're like, no, distance, distance, distance. So there's a massive amount of unpredictability and a lack of confidence in what the fuck you really feel. It's very, very ungrounded, your inner world experience, when you have this style. Emotions overwhelm you. That's a key thing. It's like, you find it very overwhelming. The intensity of this high, low, on, off, emotions overwhelm. So there's the emotion, there's the overwhelming emotion of, oh, I'm distant now, but oh my God, I feel so lonely. She's upset with me. And it's so overwhelming that it snaps you back to, I'll seek connection. I'll say sorry, I've been an asshole again. I need the connection. I need her smiles. But then, again, when you get the smiles, the emotions of happiness, the emotions of connection, the emotions of joy, of bliss, of sexual, you know, desire, it's too much. So emotions are overwhelming, even though you keep seeking them out. It's just on emotions, off emotions, on emotions, off. There's that craziness happening inside of yourself. You'll find that there's highs and lows. You seek out highs and then there's lows, highs, lows. And then the next one is, there's very few close relationships with others. So you're like a fire hydrant of it. All your human emotional experiences happening in your intimate relationship. There's enough drama there, the highs and lows, to do you for a lifetime. So you don't establish grounded, trustworthy, true friendships with others. Again, you might have people that you call friends, but like deep, open-hearted, you know, wholehearted living with true, intimate, vulnerable sharing with others, you won't do. Somebody with a disorganized, fearful, avoidant pattern will not do. So let's go through it again, guys. I'm imagining that there's clarity coming through for most, if not all of you. Probably most easy to stick your queen into one of these labels, into these categories. There you go. You're dismissive, avoidant woman. I've always known there's something wrong with you. Again, bringing humor to it. It's like, if you have placed your wife in a category, you do know her very well. You do know her wounding. You do know how she shows up. So you are qualified to recognize, if you've remained objective with this, to go, yeah, you know, I feel that she shows up dismissive, avoidant. When I was going through the research of this, I my queen, she's downstairs. If she was listening in, she might burst in the door, like kick the door down David Goggins style and go, don't you fucking psychoanalyze me, you son of a bitch, Mark. Don't you put me in that category. Well, I'll turn my voice down a little bit and I'll be like, when I was going through it, it feels to me that my queen would be in anxious, preoccupied. I'm definitely dismissive, avoidant. And hence, we were like, opposites attract, wounded attract wounded. We fit like a glove. Our egos fit like a glove. Like, oh man, like the amount of fucking drama that we went through. So you might very well place your queen and go, yeah, shit feels like, because you'll know stuff about her childhood. You'll know the signs of how she shows up behaviorally. So you may very well have clarity and it will serve, but it will only serve if this is empowering to you, if it brings about you, you'll place her in that category so you can understand her more. So there's going to be more episodes to come of how to then deal with different attachment styles, how you deal with it in your wife and how you actually meet your own needs when you're a dismissive avoidant. How do you work with that? I will bring more teachings on that, more clarity for you. So yeah, you probably have intuitively placed your queen in what you believe is her attachment style. The most important thing here is to make sure that you remain grounded and humble with yourself and get honest. Again, if you think you're in the secure box, you might have certain things that you are getting more secure. Growth is on a spectrum, but I would say forget secure and see where your most predominant lived experience in marriage has been. Have you been predominantly anxious, preoccupied, emotional set point, super high, romanticizing love, demanding, super upset? You know, you let them know it. The situation happened 2 seconds ago. You're letting them know. You're letting the world know. I'm upset. You know, tend to my needs. Are you threatened by space in relationship? Do you desire to share everything and then judge, you know, your queen that she doesn't love you enough? You know, you're always looking for space. Like, why do you need time with the girls? Blah, blah, blah. What about me? Threatened about other partners. Anxious, preoccupied. Dismissive, avoidant. The emotional thermostat set point is super low. I'm the cool, calm. I'm the poker face player at the table. You should play. Dismissive, avoidant people are probably like the world poker champions, by the way. You know, you tend to be emotionally distant. You like to think yourself as super self-sufficient, independent, but you're actually just deep down, you're avoiding true intimacy. Into me, you see. I won't disclose anything about what's happening inside myself. And if it does come out, it's going to come out 3 days, 3 months, 3 years later. And there'll be hell to pay when it comes out, because I'm going to be blaming you for making me feel that. You know, you don't share in the moment. You share weeks, months, years later. You desire space to get the fuck away from the intensity of deep intimate relating and the emotions that it threatens to bring up inside of yourself, because you're like, you decided in childhood, no emotions. Emotions are danger, and you won't have anybody break that pattern in you, because that's where you found safety in childhood. And the threats of a partner to leave, shut down. You don't care. You want to divorce? It's like you can pretend to make the decision of divorcing, and it's like, whatever, you know. It's like you're making a decision of, no, I'm just going to skip breakfast this morning. Yeah, divorce, on you go, baby. I'll be fine. Good luck with it yourself. You're going to be a fucking mess. If that's part of you, that's dismissive avoidant. And then the disorganized, fearful avoidment. Hot, cold, high, low. Passionate love, passionate distance. You know, it's a crazy journey. Coming into landing, like, it's one thing to become aware. Awareness is super empowering, because you can go, oh wow, that is how I relate in marriage. That is how my queen relates. How this shows up and what to do with it is the next important step after self-awareness. Self-awareness in itself is not enough. One key pattern to look out for that you need to break, and I don't mean break, but you need to work with and become conscious of, it's known as the pursue withdrawal pattern. No matter what attachment style you have, and you're probably playing with anxious, preoccupied, dismissive, avoidant, or disorganized, fearful, avoidant. Again, it makes sense from the childhood you had, your queen had, so it's no judgment on anybody. But they will interact in certain ways, and it will show up as pursue, withdrawal, pattern. Somebody who's pursuing, 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 the other person will be withdrawing, withdrawing, withdrawing. And then the pursuer stops, and the person that was withdrawing will go and seek to reestablish connection, and they will start pursuing, and the other might withdraw. Or you might have it just it's going one way all the time. Somebody's pursuing, 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 the other person is withdrawing, withdrawing, withdrawing. You, if you had an anxious, preoccupied with a dismissive, avoidant, it like it was my queen that was doing pursuing, and I would withdraw. I judge her pursuing. I judge her for all, you know. It's like you're only pursuing. Jesus, like, can you not leave the topic? I'd minimize. Oh, are you talking about this again? We spoke about this. We dealt this before. I judge her pursuing. So even if I met her there, I'd be withdrawing in the conversation. So there'd be the pursue withdrawal pattern. When there's the pursue withdrawal pattern, nobody is safe. No growth is happening. Because one person is super amped up, pursuing, wanting to bring some clarity, wanting to bring connection, wanting to create trust, and in a needy way, in a wounded way, pursue, 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 withdraw, withdraw, withdraw. There's almost like an energetic, this is where I say mountain in the storm, I speak to in this movement, that nobody feels that they have to maximize the issue, to turn the volume up, 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 so the other person who is turning the volume down, 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 will meet them there. Is mountain in the storm is you're not pursuing and you're not withdrawing. I say that, you know, in Hero Cosmos Men's Circles, in the podcast, in my one-on-one coaching, it's like mountain in the storm. Why is that so powerful as a masculine practitioner? Well, when the storm comes, the storm of your wounds inside, the storm is wounds, woman, and world. When the storm of your wounds come, you're not going to, the mountain doesn't attack. And it doesn't withdraw, it doesn't retreat from the experience. It's there. The mountain is just there completely. So there's no pursuing and there's no withdrawing. It's just you're there. You'll be fully with the situation. You'll be fully with yourself. You'll be fully with whatever attachment style is coming up. You'll be fully with it, but you will not force your queen to pursue, 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 and feel all this anxiety that you're not meeting her. You will meet her in the situation. You will meet her in the conversation. You will tell her and let her know through your body language and your words, like, I'm not going anywhere, baby. I'm here to form connection. I'm not going anywhere. If this conversation takes 2 hours today, I'm with you for 2 hours. If I can only be with you for like 2 minutes now, I want to let you know I'm fully with you for these 2 minutes. And I will circle back to this topic because you are that important to me. My own happiness is that important to me. And our marriage connection is that important to me. I am not going to retreat. I'm not going to withdraw. And it's like if you're the pursuer, and it's like you've had a lot of anxiety, pushing, 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 mountain in the storm. Baby, I've recognized, you might come as right, I've recognized that my style, my attachment style pattern is anxious, preoccupied, high amped up nervous system, and I'm pursuing, 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 and I'm super needy. So I would love to speak about this. I would like to speak about it in a grounded way. I'm here. I'm not going to back off the conversation, but I don't need to have it happen today, 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 right now, and force you and judge you if you won't meet me there. I would like to have that conversation with you. I'd like to have it little and often. I'm here, mountain. I'm not pursuing. I'm not going to pursue and harass you. If you're not ready now, that's okay. If you need a bit of space, it's intense for me. I'm becoming aware that's part of my pattern. But I can hold space for myself. If you need some space, that's okay. I'll meet you when you're ready. I'm going to speak way more to this in other episodes. So you will have noticed certain patterns of how your queen shows up, I will speak to how to work with that in a conscious masculine way so you can create connection, not camp out from, oh, you know, you're dismissive avoidant, bitch, that's it, that's the reason, you won't meet me. No, that's not judgmentality. It isn't from a non-judgmental, loving, compassionate way how you can work with different attachment styles with your queen and how you can work with your own needs, with your own attachment style, with your own wounding, and how you can shift yourself and your queen slowly but surely to being, to having a progressively more secure attachment style where you're fine together, where you can share your human experience non-judgmentally, where there's love, where there's radical acceptance, where the human experience of both people is honored, is discussed, is not attacked, and you start feeling this bubbling sense of confidence going forward where, wow, we can actually do this together. Wow, this is the most amazing relationship together. And it is. What I will say is, predominantly what I'm talking about, because I want to build hope into you that there is a system out there, that there is an approach that can work. Before I even knew about attachment theory, I'm doing research on it now, but it all makes sense to me. I had already, that's why I could find it very easy to go, oh, myself dismissive avoidant, my queen anxious preoccupied, because I knew all the different characteristics. Just the labels makes it sort of nice for the masculine mind. We can categorize and bring a bit more clarity to it. But what I have found is the three leadership traits that I'm bringing into the culture here in the podcast and in Heroic Husbands Men's Circles is the three masculine leadership characteristics of presence, progress, and protection. That's all that you need. Now, it's an amazingly high practice and training to embody them. Presence, unwavering focus on person you are with or task you are performing to full completion. Unwavering focus, that's, there's no pursue or withdrawal. You'll have unwavering focus with them in the conversation. And presence by itself is not complete. The emotion of presence is unconditional love. Progress, the emotion there is driven by desire. Progress is in leading the conversations and system setup needed to live you and your family's expanding life vision. You know, to have a life vision where you want to be happy together, you want to feel connected. The same shit, different day, conflict, you know, distance, high, lows, fucking battling it out with each other, sort of love-hate style stuff, that's not part of the vision. You will lead the conversations and the system setup needed. You lead the conversations in a safe way, mountain in the storm. And protection, setting boundaries, stopping forces that impede you and your family's full authentic human expression. Again, if your full authentic human expression comes from a certain attachment style, and your queen has a certain attachment style, well, that's part of your full authentic human expression in this moment. You will set boundaries to stop forces that impede your queen's full authentic human expression and yours. Judgment, resentment, nastiness, you know, pursue withdrawal pattern. You're going to stop those. You're going to set boundaries and go, baby, we got to snap out of this pursue withdrawal thing. It's not working, is it? And you'll embody that. And the boundaries inside, the forces inside yourself, again, is using this new, powerful, potent information. You know, it's the devil will quote scriptures for his own purposes, you know, to attack your queen and judge your queen and say, yeah, finally, you're the one that's wounded. Unfucking cool, guys. So presence embodied, progress embodied, protection embodied. That is the path. I have been establishing a secure attachment style, even though I didn't know the word for it until this week. That is my lived experience. That is the lived experience of my queen. Am I enlightened? Am I perfect? No, but that is the process. Presence times progress times protection. Repeat. And predominantly over time, it's more and more and more secure. More and more and more secure and safe. And my queen is growing. I am growing. Our kids are growing. It's astonishing. I'm a regular dude with an irregular desire and willingness to do deep inner work, honest deep inner work, humble, to be humbled again and again by the ridiculousness and the insanity of my own persona, and to see and come from there, taking extreme ownership, as always. And from there, we talk about inspire, not require. You don't require your queen to get this attachment style, force her, listen to the episode, you should, because you're pointing finger. No, inspire her. Inspire her with your own integration of this wisdom, with your own ownership of what this means inside of your nervous system from your childhood. Inspire her. Make her feel safe, and then she will be inspired to enter the conversation with you. That is the masculine path. Kingly brothers, amazing men, it is my absolute expectation that this information will make this episode an episode, I would say, worthy to repeat again and again and again. Maybe you've got the absolute clarity from one listen through. Beautiful. I know full well that this will have transformed and switched on a clarity in your nervous system that will make it deeply impactful for you in your inner human world, for your queen and for your kids in the seven generations beyond. If you would like support in bringing this rising self-awareness to life in your relationship, if you would like to place yourself into the most potent environment on the planet, I am billing it at that, and I will back that claim up, the most potent environment on the planet, so that your nervous system, where you're at, your wounds, your wishes, your desires, your authentic truth, and the attachment needs are met, so you can become a wholehearted, open, confident, authentic man, authentic husband, lover, parent, and human being, so that yourself, your queen, your kids, and the seven generations after you can live out with hope, with happiness. Heroic Husbands Men's Circles is really and truly the place for you to be in. There is the intake coming up, the intake in 2024. You're in the final months of the introductory price, because this shit works with astounding accuracy, precision, and absolute power. The results are astonishing. So the introductory price is available for, what is it, 23rd of October at the time of recordings, for the final couple of months in 2024. From 2025, the price goes up. So best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago. Second best time is today, is now. Pop yourself into the podcast description. In the notes, you're going to find the link there. And man, the movement will back up my claim that booking that application call will be one, if not the most important and transformative decisions you've ever made in your adult life thus far. In perfect alignment with the mantra of this movement, better husbands today, better world tomorrow. Go have an amazingly beautiful kingly day.